Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Kuf Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 16 lines from the top of the Omid. If it makes it any easier for you, try to notice a diamond around the name Amemar. On the side of the Gemara, you see the Nosei Mivneh. The topic heading is the Nosei Mivneh, is a structural note which we've combined into one notation. A diamond appears and it highlights Shnei Memros Shel Amemar, two comments made by Amemar, B'matzav Horegel B'shas Chalitza, regarding the situation, the nature of the foot of the Yavam, at the time that the shoe is to be removed. Sheidchof Horegel Bakarka. One point is that he is to apply a certain amount of pressure onto the floor, onto the ground, so that the Yevama, the sister-in-law, is going to have to make some kind of effort in order to remove the shoe. And number two, Shelo Lach Loitz Me Regel Hafucha. Shigav Shelo Klapi Kaka, not to do a chalitza, a shoe removal from a foot that's, there's an abnormality here where the foot is inverted so that the top of the foot actually is facing the ground. It's some type of abnormality, but it, that being the case, one should, that would not be an acceptable type of chalitza if the foot is in that state. The Gemara, Omar Amemar, Haiman de Cholitz, Tzorech Limidchese Likare. One who was participating in Chalitza, the surviving brother of the deceased, he has to be standing on his foot which means that certainly he's not allowed to raise his foot in the air to make it easier for her to remove the shoe. That absolutely not. He's supposed to push on his foot into the ground. Of course, not to the extent that she can't pick up his foot, but pressure should be applied to the ground. Omar le Rav Ashi la Meimar, v'ha tanya, but did we not learn bein oimed, bein yoshev, bein muteh, that chalitza can take place whether he's standing, sitting, or leaning? So the Gemara says that is true. However, emo uli oilam didochis lekare. However, whatever position the rest of his body is in, his foot though should be with pressure onto the ground. Fiomar amemar haiman demaski al lichsa dekare. One who maski walks on lichsa dekare. It's a reference to he walks on the top of his foot. In other words, his foot is inverted so that as he walks along, the top of his foot is really facing the ground. Lo chalitz. He is not in a position to participate in chalitza. Omar le Ravashi lameimar. So Ravashi asks v'hotanya smuchos horaglayim. The Tanaic source that we saw at the end of our previous year spoke about the removal of smuchos horaglayim. And that's something that's worn by someone whose feet are basically inoperative, dysfunctional. My lav decholitz ba ihu. A person who wears smuchos haraglayim is someone whose foot, in fact, is twisted. So does the source not, in fact, refer to the removal of his smuchos haraglayim, this called foot support, which is, in effect, his shoe? And he is a person whose foot is twisted, and it's still okay. The Gemara says, "Lo, that's not the case. We're not talking about removal of the smuchos haraglayim, this type of foot apparatus, from someone whose foot is contorted. Rather, de yohiv le liachir v'cholitz. the smuchos raglayim are actually given to someone else who has a normal foot, and it's removed from his foot. So it's a type of foot gear that is currently being worn by a yavam who has normal feet. Omar Ravashi, Lamai Dekoma Amemar, according to Amemar, the following individuals, their names are Bar Uba and Bar Kipuf. Lav Bar Uba Cholitz, Falav Bar Kipuf Cholitz. These two people are featured in another Gemara, in Maseches Moed Katan, where they had been responsible for causing Rav Ashi a sense of anguish, and as a result they were punished with their feet inverting. So Bar Uba and Bar Kipuf have inverted feet, so according to Amemar they would not be suitable to participate in a chalitza. Min Ho'arkuva Lamata, so we had seen that chalitza kshera, if a person is an amputee but from below the arkuva, below the knee, so there's a stump and a shoe is removed from that stump, that's okay, that's an acceptable chalitza. However, we were taught min arkuva lamalo chalitza psula. However, if the amputee is such that it's from above the knee and a shoe were attached to the stump that high up, that would not be an effective chalitza. V'raminhi, we raise a contradiction. This pasuk talks about Aliyah Soregel, the thrice-year pilgrimage to Jerusalem, and we call that Aliyah Soregel, and you find the word regalim in the Torah. It says Shalosh regalim tochog, and Rashi quotes that pasuk. And so the word regalim, prat lebale kavin, to the exclusion of people who are amputees, who wear prosthetic legs. They are exempt from the mitzvah of re'iyah. And Rashi adds, shepetur meri'iyah, almo shoik lav regel hu. A bal kav is someone who's going to wear a prosthetic leg as a result of his lower, the foot was amputated, and he has a part of his leg that extends beneath the knee, but nevertheless the pasuk is exempting him from the thrice year pilgrimage Aliyas HaRegel. So what do we see from here? That the shok, the calf of the foot, is not considered a regel. It's not considered a foot. And the pasuk says that the shoe must be removed me'al raglo. So the Gemara answers, that is true. In terms of the pilgrimage, alias HaRegel, a person who is a Baal Kav is exempt because he doesn't have a regel. He doesn't have a foot. However, when it comes to Chalitza, he is still acceptable to participate in the shoe removal. Shiny hoch, the case of Yibum is different, of Chalitza is different. Diftiv, me'al raglo. It says the shoe is removed from above his foot. In other words, there's a certain amount of leeway here, or it's more inclusive than the halacha of Aliyas HaRegel, so that even if he is lacking the foot, as long as there is the shok, the part of the foot beneath the knee is there, he can do the chalitza. The Gemara asks, "Ihachi, if you're justifying chalitza because of the pasuk of me'al raglo, l'malo min arkuvanami, me'al raglo means above his foot. So let's say he's an amputee from above the knee. That should also be okay, and yet we learned that that's not okay." The Gemara answers, "Me'al v'lo me'al de me'al." The Torah says you remove the shoe from above his foot, but not from above that which is above. In other words, the foot is in your mind's eye divided into sections. You have your basic standard foot, then the section that's the calf, the section between the ankle and the knee, and then the section above the knee, the thigh. That already, if you're dealing with the thigh, that's called above that which was above. And that's beyond the purview or the range suggested in the pasuk for chalitza. Omar Rav Papa, Shma Mina, we shall conclude from what we have taught now and what we've learned now that from beneath the knee, that is considered kosher because that's the immediate section above the foot. So we have to conclude from that, highest avira, the ankle of a person, ad ara nochis. In terms of halacha, now I cannot say that I've checked this out with people that are expert in bone structure and anatomy, but as far as the Chazal are concerned, even though technically speaking the ankle might be made of several bones, but the bones there are attached to one another with cartilage and what other tissue might be there. So in halacha we view the ankle as a singular entity from the top of the ankle to the floor, to the ground. That's what and why is that? Why is that important for us to establish? If you're going to say that the ankle bone is made of sections and it's considered separate pieces, havelei ihu me'al, then the istavira, the ankle then is considered above the foot. The shoka me'al de me'al, and then the shok, the calf, that would be me'al de me'al, that's above the above. So once again, the ankle bone is that which goes from what we would call the ankle down to the floor. It's considered one bone, and that's considered the equivalent of the regel, the foot. Because if you are going to view the ankle bone as in sections, even though anatomically maybe it is, but halachically we're not going to say that. And as I suggest before, that all the various cartilage and tissue connections establish it as one entity, one unit, and therefore that is all considered basic regel, and the shok, bone above the ankle, is considered me'al. Omar Ravashi, afilu tema mifsek pasik. Ravashi feels you can even say that the ankle is viewed as several different sections. However, kol de bahadi kara, anything that's on the same plane as the foot, kikara domi, has the status of the foot, and not, and we thereby don't encounter the problem of me'al de me'al. Once again, even if you say that the ankle is viewed as something in several sections. Minar Kuva Lamala. Before we continue, notice there's a flurry of triangles that appear. On the side, we have under our Nose, Mivne heading, the triangles introduce Kushios, questions, Mipsukim, based on verses, Al Ha de Katani Bamisha de Regel Hainu Minar Kuva Lamata. We're going to be questioning, based on Psukim, that which the Mishnah established, that the term regel is applicable to that which is below the knee. So you can rest assured that from these Psukim we're going to refer to different parts of the human anatomy that appear above the knee, and yet the term regel appears. So we're going to have to square that away with where knows our Tanaic source with the Psukim. Mosiv Rav Kahana, who Beshilyaso Hayoitses Mibain Ragleho. Translated, the Pasuk refers to the afterbirth that emerges from a woman from between her legs. Notice the word Ragleho, and everyone is familiar with the female anatomy. The afterbirth emerges from that part of her body that's described here as Mibain Ragla, that's much further above the area of the calf. So why does the Mishnah say that min ha'akuva ulamala is not considered raglo when here you see regel being referred to that area of the woman where birth takes place? Omar Abaye. Abaye explains that Bishah Shekiras Leilid, when a woman is in the travails of birth, she Keras means she bends over to give birth, Noyeses Akeveha Beyarcho Seha Violetis. She actually folds her feet in such a way that her heels are folded opposite her thighs. So if one bends their legs backwards so that the heel is let's say if one is kneeling, so in a position like that, the leg or the foot, that is more accurately the foot, the heel is actually opposite the thigh. And Violetus, and that's how she gives birth. So it comes out that the birth is actually literally mibein ragleha, literally between her feet, because of the bent foot position. So that you don't see from here that the thighs are considered regel. Toshma, the pasuk says lo osa raglov velo osa svomoy. Without getting into the details and the historical background to this particular pasuk, it's a reference to someone who had not shaved the hair of his legs nor his sfomo. Sfomo is the area around one's mouth, the mustache. So that what we're describing here, he didn't remove his hair. It's a reference to the, we'll call it the area around the organs of gender. That hair, that's what the pasuk is referring to. He had not removed the hair from there. So what do we see? We see that part of the anatomy where the organs of gender are found is called regel. So it's much higher up than the knee. And it's still called regel. Gemara says you can't use this pasuk as proof, because this pasuk is actually simply striving for, say, refined speech. Lishna ma'alya. Lishna ma'alya is refined speech or a euphemism. So that regel here is simply a borrowed expression. It doesn't, and it doesn't reflect the true meaning of regel. The true meaning of regel, though, is, as we said before, the area beneath the knee, and certainly the foot itself is called the regel, and the area that we refer to as the calf, that is above the regel. All that's the kosher range for chalitza, but above the knee is called me'al de me'al. It's not regel. Toshma vayovo shol lahosech es raglov. The pasuk describes Shaul entering a cave to relieve himself. Lahosech es raglov, so that the area of the anatomy in which waste emerges, that area is referred to as raglov. So it's way above the knee. So why does the Mishnah say once again that min ha'akuva ulamala is not considered removal of the shoe from the regel when you see above the knee is called regel? Once again, lishna ma'alya. The pasuk is using the word raglov, but only in a borrowed fashion, in a euphemistic fashion, because it's striving for refined language. But that's not the technical definition of regel. Toshma. This pasuk is in the context of Eglon, the king of Moab. It says, Ach Mesich hu raglov becheder hamakira. So again, you see, Mesich is raglov, and here, similar to what we suggested before, that the area where the human waste emerges is called regel, which once again is way above the knee. The Gemara says, Lishno ma'alyo. Again, this is an example of a euphemistic term. The Gemara asks a question. This is a pasuk dealing with Sisera, who had intimacy with Yoel. Again, we're not getting into all of the historical context and the storyline of the verses, but sufficient for us is to simply realize that the pasuk Bein Ragleha is a reference to intimacy. So what do we see? We see that the area in which intimacy is taking place is called Ragleha, so, and that's way above the knee. The Gemara says Lishna Me'alya. This again is an example of a euphemistic turn of phrase. Now, since we mentioned the intimacy between Sisera, who was a military official, a general who was warring against the Jews, and through a subterfuge, Yoel killed him. Gemara gets off onto that topic. Omar Rabbi Yochanan Sheva Be'ilos Bo'el Oisoi Rosha Ba'Oisa Hayom. In that encounter of intimacy, there were seven acts of intimacy conducted between Yoel and Sisera. Oso Rosh means that wicked man. That's a reference to Sisera. Shinemar, and the number seven is hinted to in the following pasuk. Bein Ragleha, Kora, Nofal, Shochav, Bein Ragleha. These are all verbs indicating, each verb indicating a separate act of intimacy. So that Kora, he bent over, Nofal, he fell, Shochav, he lay, Bein Ragleha, between her legs, Kora, Nofal, Basher, Kora, Shom, Nofal, Shodud. So we've used numbering in our marked Gemara so that you can see seven verb forms indicating the seven acts of intimacy. The pasuk praises Yoel for her bravery and for her initiative, in effect helping to save the nation of Israel from this enemy. And so the Gemara asks, "V'ha'komis hanya me'avera?" The Tosfos explains the basis of this question is, why does the Novi praise her when she was in effect benefiting from that which is sinful? You have a Jewish woman having intimacy with a Gentile man, and that's considered that's something that ordinarily speaking is forbidden, and how can that lead to a praiseworthy attitude toward her? Omar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. So the following is to be known. Kol toivoson shel rishoyim. What one might describe as benefit that one receives from the wicked. Ra'a, we're at the top of Omid Beis. Ra'a hi eitzel tzadikim. It's considered abominable. It's considered disgusting in the eyes of tzaddikim, in the eyes of the righteous. So Rashi at the top says, "Ro he shesoinim harishoyim v'kotzenaf shetzadik b'hanoson." The righteous is abhorred by that which you would describe as pleasurable when the source of it is a wicked man. Hilkoch lav hanohi. Therefore, since it's abhorrent in the eyes of the righteous, it's not considered pleasurable, and hence we're praising a woman who really put herself out and experienced no pleasure. And this concept is borne out by the following: Shenemar hishomel chopente dabir imyankiv mitoy vad ra. Lavan in Sefer Bereishis was warned by the Almighty not to speak with Yankiv, whether it be good things or bad things. So Lavan, who was a wicked man, was warned not to speak kindly, nor wickedly, nor harshly to Yankiv. Bishlamo ra l'chayi. I understand why the Almighty would warn Lavan not to speak evil to him. L'chayi means fine. That's reasonable. It makes sense. Elotoyv amai lo. Why shouldn't Lavan speak words of kindness and grace to Jacob? Eloshma mino. We can see from here, toivosan shereshoyim ro hi etzel tzadikim. The the pleasure, the benefit of the wicked in the eyes of the righteous is abhorrent. The Gemara raises a question. Bishlama Hasam, I understand over there by Yankiv and Lavan, where Lavan is warned not to speak any words, even positive words. Dilma Matkir Le Shma Davidis Kechavim. There's the suspicion that he might mention, make reference to his idols. Rashi says Lama Ganavta Es Elehai, where Lavan put the question to Yaakov, why did you steal my gods? So in that context, those were his idols. In that context, so that any speech of Lavan would result, even if it's positive, would result in his making reference to his idols. So that I understand. Ela hacha mai roika. But here, with regard to Yoel and Sisera, what's the ra? What's the abomination? Answer: the kashodi bo zuhama is in the context of their intimacy. He, this heathen idol worshiper general, would be casting into her zuhama, filth. The Omer of Yochanan, b'shal shebo nocha shal chavo. Here we're dealing with something that is probably a very Kabbalistic, mystical area of thought, but that's beyond the purview of Gemara marking. So we're going to have to limit ourselves to the translation, and with that we'll at least get a certain sense of appreciation of what the Gemara is saying, even though there is quite a bit more to delve into. So Rav Yochanan tells us that when the Nochash is often translated as the serpent, the snake of the story in the Garden of Eden. Personally, I don't like translating and limiting myself to the literal translation, because it oftentimes can conjure up images of what we associate with, we'll say in this case, snakes and serpents. What the Nochash was at that time, even if it was a type of snake, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that it today has a different form than it had then, without getting into detail. But it says, Rabbi Yochanan tells us that when the Nochash had intimacy with Chava, with the wife of Odom and Chava, when the Nochash had intimacy with her, Hitil bo zuamo. He cast into her this entity called zuamo, filth. Yisrael shomdel ar Sinai, the Jewish people who were present at Mount Sinai for the giving of the Torah, poska zuamosan, that filth element departed from them. Oivdei kechavim shelo omdu bar Sinai, the idol worshippers who were not at Mount Sinai, lo poska zuamosan, that element of filth never departed. So Sisera, who was an idol worshiper, a descendant of idol worshippers, his forebearers were not at Mount Sinai, so he had within him that same zuhama that was communicated from the original Nochash to Chava. The Gemara will continue with a quote from the Mishnah. At the same time, we also have a topic heading which features chaltz on the side, the nosei chaltza b'min'ol she'eino shelo. The chalitza was done, she removed a shoe from the surviving brother, a shoe that was not his. So we quote from the Mishnah, chaltza b'min'ol she'eino shelo v'chulei, tanu rabbanan. And now we have a Tanaic source that elaborates, and it works with a posuk. The posuk is found, and we've noted it on the side of the Gemara, from Sefer Dvorim, Perek Chof Hei, Pasuk Tes. The Pasuk says, V'nikshu yavimto elav li'enei hazakenim v'choltza na'aloi me'al ragloi v'yorku b'fonov. The woman, the Yavoma, draws near unto the sages, the rabbis, and she removes his shoe from upon his foot. And the yorka b'fonav, and she spits, the onsa, the omra, and she declares, she announces, kocho ye'oseh lo ish asher lo yivne es beis ochiv. Thusly is done to a man that does not maintain, doesn't build the name of his brother. And that's a function of his not willing to marry her, not to do yibum with her. So he's not maintaining the name of his deceased brother through reproduction with her. V'nikros shmo b'Yisrael beis chalutzanal. That's in Pasuk Yud. And there is a proclamation made that he is called Beis Chalutzanal. Now the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, Na'aloi. As you can see, that word appeared in Pasuk Tes. Ein li elo na'aloi. From this I would think that it has to be his shoe, only his shoe. Na'al shel kol adam minayin, a shoe belonging to anyone else. From where do I know that that's acceptable? Talmud Lomar, Na'al, Na'al, Mikol Makom. You have the word Na'al in Pasuk Tes, and the word Na'al is repeated in Pasuk Yud. So that is inclusive of even a shoe that is not his. Him came Ma Tamalom Na'lo. So why then does the Pasuk use the word Na'lo, which is in the possessive form, meaning his, when it doesn't have to be his? The Gemara says that Na'lo tells me something else. Na'loi Haru'uya Haro'i Lo. A shoe that is fit for him. Now, when we say it's fit for him, we mean that quite literally. Prat legodoyl she'en yochol alof bo, to the exclusion of a shoe that's oversized, that if he were to wear it, he wouldn't be able to walk in it. Uprat lekotn she'en chayfe roiv raglo, also to the exclusion of a shoe that's too small, that doesn't cover the majority of his foot. Uprat lesandol hamesulayim she'en lo okev, and to the exclusion of this kind of sandal, sandal musulaim. Rashi says, hanifchas, it's missing, it's depleted. Nifchas word pochos, it's missing. What is it missing? Shein lo okev, it doesn't have a heel. The posuk then na'alo excludes a sandal musulaim that doesn't have the heel. Abaye have koi kamei de Rav Yosef. Asoi Yevoma lachlots. Abaye was standing in the presence of Rav Yosef, and a Yevoma approached who needed chalitza. Omar lay. Rav Yosef said to Abaye, have lay, give to the Yevom sandloch, your shoe. Yohiv lay sandalo de smola. So Abaye gave him the shoe that fit his left foot. The Rashi says, Yoiv le desmola, b'miskavein ovad, he did this deliberately, delo svira le labaye, desandol she'ein shelo muter lechatchila. Abaye doesn't hold that using someone else's shoe is a good first choice. So, we continue in the Gemara. Omar le, so Rav Yosef says, Amar de Omur Rabbanan Dieved. The use of a left shoe to be removed from the right foot, that's something that's only good post facto, but as a first choice, is that something to do? So why are you giving him, as before the act was done, why are you giving him the left shoe? The Gemara continues, Omar Le, Abaye says back, Ihachi, if what you're worried about, if what you're concerned about is doing things in the first choice fashion, Sandal Shein Sheloi Nani, using someone else's shoe as well, Amar Deomar Rabbanan Dieved, the Rabbanan accept that only post facto, but Lechadchila Mi Omar, but as a first choice, who says? And you yet are asking me to give him my shoe. It's not going to be his. It'll be his. It's mine. So if Smuel bothers you because it's not lechatchila, Ein Shelo is also not lechatchila. Omar Le, Rav Yosef responds, I guess you didn't understand me when I said give him your shoe. Hachi ko amin olach. Thusly, I am really saying to you, Hav le v'akni le, give him the shoe, transfer the shoe to him, and grant him acquisition of it. Akni le, that he should acquire the shoe, so that for this particular ceremony, it will be literally his. Sandal shel eitz. So our Mishnah said that that's Kshera. Man Tana, who accepts a wooden shoe as a sufficient, as a valid chalitza shoe. You'll see that we have two approaches. Number one, Omar Shmuel, Rebbe Meir he. This is in accordance with Rebbe Meir. The Snan, Hakitea, Yoitze Bekav Shiloi, Divrei Rebbe Meir. A amputee can walk out on Shabbos with his prosthetic leg, his prosthetic foot, which is called a kav. He can go from one domain to another, which indicates it's an article of clothing for him, it's a shoe for him. That's Rebbe Meir's opinion. And this kav is made of wood. So that you see that something that's wood is considered a shoe. Rabbi Yossi disagrees, but we want to focus right now on Rabbi Meir, and you can see from his halacha regarding Shabbos that he's viewing a wooden entity as a shoe. Avuah de Shmuel says that as far as our mission is concerned, you don't have to limit it to the singular opinion of Rabbi Meir, but rather the mechupa or the divrei hakol. The mission that spoke about the sandal shel eitz is really a shoe made of wood but coated, covered in leather. So that makes it considered leather according to all opinions and not just a Rebbe Meir opinion. Before we continue, you'll notice we have a double underlining marking on the side. We have a nosei, mivne heading. The double underline represents shnei deis berava, two opinions as to what Rava holds. We'll see, we've underlined in the Gemara of Poppy and Rav Papa, each one of them has an opinion as to what Rava says, binyan chalitza binal muchlat, binagoyim. Muchlat is a term that has relevance to the realm of tzaras. This is a situation where the mitzora is no longer is in the state of doubtful tzaras, but he's been determined to have definite tzaras. Without getting into the details, because that's an entire discussion in the Torah, many psukim are dedicated to this topic, but just realize that something that in the realm of tzaras, in negoyim, there's something that's called muchlat. Something, an article of clothing that is muchlat, it is to be burnt. So now we turn to the Gemara. Omar of Popi, Mishmei de Rava, Sandal Hamusgar. Now, Musgar is the situation where an article of clothing is afflicted with Nigoyim, with Tzoras, but it's not determined to be certain Tzoras. So the individual is locked away, so to speak, for a week. That's the period of time called Musgar. So Sandal Hamusgar, if the sandal is afflicted with this discoloration that we refer to as tzoras, but it hasn't been determined to be definitive tzoras, lo tachlotz bo, it's not useful, it's not good for chalitza, ve'im cholza chalitza sikshar. If the sandal hamusgar was used for chalitza, it nevertheless is acceptable. We should mention that the muskar is as a situation. It's like a waiting period in which we wait to see what happens with regard to the affliction. Does it expand? And if it would, then it would be declared muchlat and it would have to be burnt. But in the meantime, it's muskar. Now, something that has to be burnt, in your mind's eye, even before it's burnt, one might view it as if it's not there because of its destiny. If it's destined to be burnt, it would be viewed as not there, and then it would, if it's viewed as not there, so then you have a situation where something has a, we have a requirement of size, but something that's not there doesn't have size. So the muskar, since it's not destined as it is now to be burnt, the chalitza done with it is kosher. However, sandal hamuchlat, a sandal which has been determined to have definite soras, and as a result of that, it is to be burnt. As Rashi says, muchlat chalitzos apsula del sreifakoi, it is destined to be burnt. Vanan shir boinon, we in chalitza have a dimension that is required. Choifes roi vragloi. The muhlat is in your mind's eye, considered as if it's smashed and non-existent. So we go back to the Gemara with Rav Papi having made this distinction between the muskar and the muhlat, and he, where he says that you shouldn't use a sandal muhlat. The im chalitza, chalitza sabsul, if she removed a sandal that's been determined to be muhlat from the brother-in-law's foot, it's ineffective. It's called a chalitza psula. It's certainly ineffective in allowing her to marry someone else. Rav Papa Mishmei de Rava Omar, Echad sandal hamuzgar ve'echad sandal hamuchlat lo tachlos bo v'imcholza chalitza sakshira. So you have a more lenient approach to things, that of Rav Papa, quoting Rava, that even the muchlat, though it's not a good first choice, but if you did it, it's kosher, it's effective. So that you can see, according to Rav Papa, as opposed to Rav Papa is saying that even though something is destined to be burnt, that doesn't mean that we view it right now as if it's not there. Mesve. Now, on the side of the more, we have an introduction to these triangles under the, where we've noted the triangle Kushos al Rav Papi. These are questions that are directed against Rav Papi. Rav Papi was the more restrictive of the opinions, holding that a muhlat is not suitable for chalitza. Mesve. As we said, we're now going to be asking on Rav Papi. Rav Papi had pointed out that a sandal hamuchlat is unacceptable, is invalid for chalitza. And the reason being, because since it is destined to be burnt, it is viewed currently as if it's non-existent. So it is lacking the required dimension, which was roiv raglo, the majority of the foot. What do we see in this source? Bias Hamuzgar. Do note, by the way, that it's a four, the question lasts a couple of lines. We're referring now to a house that's afflicted with tsaras. Bias Hamuzgar, metame mitochoi, vamuchlot mitocho umeachorov. A house that's in its muskar state, that's the interim state where we're waiting to determine whether it's a full-fledged, full-blown case of nigei botim, so it will communicate defilement from within. If a person puts his hand into the house and touches the wall inside a house that's musgar, he will become tome. A muchlot house will communicate tuma not only from within, but from the outside as well. Vizeh vizeh mitamin bebiya. Bio means entrance. Both a muchlot and both a muskar and muchlot will make a person who walks inside the house, even without touching the walls, simply by walking inside the house, he will become tomei. Ve'i salka daito kidemaktis shdomi, if you view something that is destined to be destroyed as if it is currently destroyed, v'habo'inon v'habo el habayis v'leka. The pasuk that refers to a person becoming tamei upon entering a house that's afflicted, he has to enter the house. But if it's considered destroyed because of that, its eventuality, so he hasn't walked into a house. It's a pile of rubble. The Gemara says, shiny hasam, that case is different. meaning in general, something that's destined to be burnt or destroyed is viewed currently as destroyed, as non-existent. But the case of the house that's mukhlad is different. The Omar Kral, maybe we didn't point out emphatically enough, a house that is mukhlad is to be knocked down. So then if it's to be knocked down, and we say Ketuse Mechtas Shura, why is there Tumah upon entering such a house? If after all, the house in our mind's eye is not there. So the Gemara says that Shiny House, in that case, is different. Yom HaKroh, V'nitatz Es Habayis. You shall smash the house. Afilu B'shas Netitza Korui Bayis. Even at the point that it is smashed, the word bias is still appropriate, it's still applicable. So in halachic terms, even though it's smashed, it's still considered a house. But that's limited to the case of the bias amenuga because of the pasuk. So just to repeat that last point, because of this pasuk, which says, v'notatz es habayis, that's in Vayikra, Perek Yud Dalet, pasuk Mem Hei, we learn that even though it is destined to be smashed, the term bias, the term house, nevertheless applies to it. Ta Shema. And we continue with another example from the realm of Negoyim. Here we talk about a piece of fabric that's afflicted with tzoras. Matlis, it's a piece of fabric. Sheyesh bo shalosh al shalosh. If it has the size of 3 by 3 fingers, afal pi she'ein bo kezayis. It's made of very thin material so that when you, let's say, fold it up or roll it up, it doesn't have a kezayis, an olive quantity of fabric. Kevon shenichnas ruba lebayis tohor. If the majority of this piece of fabric enters a house that is tohor, temaseu, It makes the house tome. My lav muchletis. Are we not in fact talking about a piece of fabric that has been determined to be muchlat? And in order for fabric to be significant enough to communicate tome, it has to have a minimum dimension, as you can see here, 3 by 3 fingers. So what are we in effect saying? Even though it's going to be burnt, that doesn't affect the shiur. And we won't say kituse mechtas shiur, a kasha on Rav Poppy, who had said that using a muchlat shoe is invalid for chalitza. So how come over here do we say that the fabric is still viewed as if it's there, and if we're talking about fabric that's muchlat? The Gemara says, no, we're not talking about fabric that's muchlat, lo. Musgaris. It's musgar. Musgar means it's in the waiting period. It's not determined to be definite tzoras. So even Rav Poppy acknowledges if it's not definite tzoras, so it still has its dimensions. Question. Ihochi. Emosefa. Note the length of this question. Well, if that be the case, if it's musgar, so then let's continue reading the source and see if we can do so with this in mind. Hoyu bo kamo zeisim. The fabric has several olive quantities present. Kevon shenichnas mimeno kezayis labayis tohor temasehu. Once a kezayis quantity of the fabric enters a house that is tohor, it will communicate tuma to the contents of the house. If you say very well that we're talking about a case of muchlat, hainu de iskish lemes. When you're dealing with tzoras at the muchlat level, we know that it is compared to the dead, and the dead defiles when you have an olive quantity of corpse material, of corpse substance that communicates defilement of the dead. We call tumas meis. And this source, which is talking about an afflicted piece of fabric, makes reference to a kezayis quantity. So if you say that the source is talking about mukhlat, mukhlat is compared to mace, hence we have a basis for the aleph quantity. Eloyamris musgeres. But if you say that it's talking about fabric that hasn't reached the mukhlat stage, it's only musgeres, amai iskish lemace. Why the reference to an aleph quantity, which indicates a comparison to the dead? Let's take a look at Rashi. Iamris, Rashi is just a couple lines up from here. Iamris bishlama muchletes, hainu demetame bekezayas, afilu ein kan beged sholosh al sholosh. If you have a kezayas quantity, even if it lacks 3x3 fingers, you're talking about rather thick type fabric, so it will be metame mishum demuchlat iskish lemeis, umeis metame bekezayas, because muchlat is compared to the dead, and the dead communicate tuma when you have an aleph quantity. The hecha iskish, where is that comparison? Dichtiv, it says in the Torah, al no tihi kames. This is Moshe Rabbeinu praying for the healing of his sister Miriam. She Miriam muskeres havoi, the koma le'aron le'moshe al no techalet, shelo tehe kames. She was in a state of muskar. She was afflicted with tzaras, and what Aaron prayed, or Aaron beseeched. I actually made a slight error before. It wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu's prayer. It was Aaron beseeching Moshe to seek her healing, so that she would not become mukhlat and hence be like the dead. So you see from this that someone who reaches mukhlat is compared to the dead. The Gemara answers, Ella, shiny hasam, the Omar Kro, that basically mukhlat in general, we will say kituse mechtas shiura. And as far as the source concerning the fabric is concerned, you see that we have to set it up as mukhlat. If that be the case, so how in the world can we speak about the fabric as being 3x3 fingers and the majority of it going into the house? If you're talking about mukhlat, then it should lack the shi'ur and not mitama the house when it goes in, because it's considered as if it's not there. So we answer as follows. As we said, in general, mukhlat is considered mechtas shi'ur. It's lacking. Its dimensions are destroyed, are smashed, are non-existent. But as far as the din of mukhlat by fabric, the Omar Kro, the Pasuk says, v'saraf es habeged, which means, and that of course is in the context of the cloth afflicted with saras, afilu b'shas reifa, even when it's being burnt, karui beged, it's called a beged. So that we have on the one hand a principle, and on the other hand we have what we'll say an exception, a second exception, here in the case of the fabric, just like we saw before with regard to the house that was mukhlat, and nevertheless it's still considered a house because of the Pasuk v'notases habayis. Here we have the Pasuk v'sarfas habeged. The Gemara asks, v'ligmar minei, why not learn from here? Let this serve as a precedent. And then a shoe that is mukhlat is considered still a shoe, having the dimensions, and it would be fit for chalitza. The Gemara responds, isur mituma lo gamrinan. In Torah law, there are different categories. Exactly how to accurately translate them, I can't guarantee I'll do justice. But you have, for example, the realm of mominus, the whole realm concerning monetary matters. You have the realm of tuma, which has to do with the realm of defilement. And then the third realm, which we would maybe call the realm of ritual law. I don't know if that's a good translation, but it It's not the area of defilement, and it's not the area of monetary matters. It will concern the area, in our case, of releasing the woman in the context of chalitza. Otherwise, she's isor, she's prohibited to marry out. So these are two different realms of halacha with their own standards. And if you're suggesting to me to learn from the realm of defilement to the realm of chalitza, which is the realm of isor, cross realms do not lend themselves to concluding one from the other. And that's what the Gemara means here. Isur mituma lo gamrina. So that even though in the realm of tuma, which is the realm in which saras is found, you might have something that, though destined to be destroyed, is nevertheless viewed as still there. But in the realm of isur, something that is destined to be destroyed is viewed as if it right now is not there. And hence a shoe that's mukhlat, Rav Papi will tell you, you cannot use for chalitza. Omar Rava Hilchisa Echod Sandal Hamusgar, the Echod Sandal Shemuchlot, the Echod Sandal Shel Avodas Kechavim, whether it be a shoe that's Musgar or Muchlot, which we mentioned before, and the Muchlot is something that's destined to be burnt, and likewise a shoe that is part of an idol or idolatry. Imagine an idol is adorned with shoes, so it's considered something in the service of the idol. All of these things, lo tachlots, don't use them for chalitza. V'im chalitza, chalitza sakshera. If post facto they were used, so it's nevertheless valid. Before we go further, just a point that we will look into in the Rashi. Shel avodas kechavim, shenoyelim oisay litzelim, shoes that are put onto an idol. Baraglov, if it's a statue that has a form of feet, so the shoe is put onto its feet. Kishemasiyan oisay mimokum lemokum, it's put on its feet when it's being transferred from one place to another. So we said that the chalitza is acceptable. Now, if we look into the Rashi, Chalitza Sekshera, you'll find something very interesting. Now, Rav Papi before had given us an approach saying that Isura mi tuma lo yalfinon, they don't learn from cross topics. However, if we look at this Rashi, where he's commenting on this ruling, the ruling of Rava, that Muchlat, a sandal that's muchlat is yes acceptable. Muchlat kidamoran, Rashi says, shafilu bisha srefa kori beged. That even when it is to be burnt, it is called an article of clothing that we saw, v'sarfas beged. We saw that pasuk quoted before. And what about the fact that this is a different realm? We're dealing with Isur, and that posik is from the realm of Tumah. The lav melafu. So this is very significant on the part of Rashi, that it's not a function here of my learning or my discovering a point of law from one realm to another. Elogilui milsa bi'almohu. It's a mere revelation of that which existed all the time. It's an exposure of something, reality that existed before. And what we mean by that is that the Torah reveals that which is that a muchlat, which is to be burnt, is still called what it is originally. That applies across the boards. The Torah reveals that in the context of tzaras with regard to tumah, but it applies to all cases of articles of clothing. And again, it's not a function of my learning, my deriving the topic of Isur from the topic of Tumah. That's what Rashi is addressing when he says, V'lav me'lafu, I'm not learning one from the other. V'shal v'diz kechovim, Rashi goes on to say, Nami hoyov lilucha ovid, since it's designed for the transportation of the idol. When it's being moved, so shoes are put on it. It's serving the idol. It's called lav l'sreifo kaimi. The articles that are in service of an idol are not destined to be burnt. They can be rendered permissible through an idol worshiper declaring it null and void. Now we turn back to the Gemara itself. Rava linked together the Sandal HaMuskar and the Sandal Shel Mukhlad and the Sandal Shel Avodas Kochavim, which we said was Meshamshei Avodah Zarah. It's not Omed L'Sreifa. Therefore, the Chalitza, if done post facto, is valid. However, Shel Takroivas Avodas Kochavim, this is an item that is offered to an idol. If, let us say, someone offered a pair of shoes to an idol as a gift to it, that's called takruvas avodas kochavim. This is something that cannot be nullified at a later point. It's takruvas avodas kochavim is compared to the dead, and therefore, since it has no nullification, it has no reparation. We will see that the chalitza done with takruvas avodas kochavim, a shoe that was offered as a gift to an idol, that will be a chalitza that's invalid. Well, and there is, in addition to that, we continue at the top of Daf Kuf Dalet Amud Aleph, Vishel Ir Hanidachas, a shoe that comes from a city of idol worship. The rule of such a city is that the offenders are killed by the sword, and all of its contents are destroyed. So the contents of an Ir Hanidachas are to be burnt. So a shoe from an Ir Hanidachas is going to be burnt. V'shel zokein ha'osui l'chvodo. This is an expression that refers to shrouds, something that is made for the dead. It's not a shoe then that's made for walking, so it's not considered a shoe, as Rashi says. Lo tachlots, with these items one shall not do chalitza. With these sources of different shoes, one shall not do chalitza. Vim cholza, chalitza sapsula. If one were to use the shoe that's a takrovas of avodas kochavim, or a shoe from an Ir Hanidachas, or a shoe that was made for the benefit of a corpse, those are shoes that are invalid for chalitza. Omale Ravina l'Ravashi. My shno zokin osi lichvodo, the lav lehilucha avid. What is different about the shoe that's made for the corpse? It's a shoe, and we said it's invalid because it's not made for walking. If it's not made for walking, it can't be called halachically a shoe. Again, halachically, when you look at it objectively, it appears to be a shoe, but halachically, you can't view it as a shoe. Well, why? Because it's not made for walking. Debei dino nami, the official chalitza shoe of the courts. It's a shoe that's, as we say, it's an official court shoe. Nami lav lehiluchov. It's not made for walking around. Omale, so Ravashi says back to Ravina, ilu maski bei shlucha debei dino, mi kopit ole bei dino. If a court emissary would actually put on that shoe, the shoe that's designated for chalitza, would anyone be upset with him? No, people wouldn't mind. They wouldn't be upset with him, so that you see that it has the potential for walking use, as opposed to the shoe that's made for the corpse. No one is going to walk around with that. So up to this point then, we finished Rava's Psak, where he lists several shoes that are suitable for chalitza, included in which was the sandal hamuchlat, which to us was kind of a surprise. It was a chiddush there, that even though Rava is subscribing to the concept of kitusei mechtas shiura, nevertheless, a muchlat, because of a gzeres hakosa, because of a posuk, it's not considered. The pasuk will say overrules the concept of kitusim after shu with regard to an article of clothing, and the shu coming under the realm of beged. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.